Welcome into Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. I plan a lot more interviews than last week, which I don't know that we have maybe one. We didn't have many interviews last week. And I plan more, but today there will be 2 hours open phone line. So if you want to get let off steam, if you want to express your confusion, if you want to do whatever, you would make comments. If you're ready for football season or not ready for football season, or you want to talk baseball or all of the shenanigans going on in college athletics, certainly all of that. You know, Friday was just, I don't know what Friday was. It was weird. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse as the day went on. But hopefully things will get stabilized. Again, we're broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS on, yes, this glorious Monday morning. And I say glorious, talking about baseball, obviously. I got a chance over the weekend to go to Minute Maid Park for the first and probably only time this year. I'm not a big go to the stadium guy, but I do love Minute Maid Park, and it is it was great to be there. I was a little concerned going into the series because the Rangers had played so poorly. And they continue to play poorly. The Astros didn't play very well this weekend, and they still got the sweep. I mean, Saturday's game, the one I was at, had a chance to go down as one of the craziest games ever. The Astros pitched terrible. Listen to this. They pitched terrible, and they took a no-hitter into the seventh. It was one of the worst pitch games I've ever seen, I think. Now, again, the final score was 4-1, and I guess I shouldn't say worst pitch games. It was one of the games where the two pitchers had so little command, it was unbelievable. Like, in the sixth inning, I think it was, you look up, and both starting pitchers had thrown more balls than strikes. They were walking people left and right. It was just, it was pub on. And obviously, if you're thinking about trading for Kyle Gibson, that's now three straight really bad outings after Pitt having a great first half. So where is his head right now? You know, where is he right now? If over the next week you're thinking about trading a Kyle, I mean, he was terrible Saturday. Could not throw a strike. Now, he did do a good job with runners on of getting key outs when he needed them. Sometimes that's the pitcher, and sometimes that's baseball that gets those guys out. But he did do a good job of that. I mean, the Astros weren't that far from, you know, taking a no-hitter into the ninth. I mean, and yet he threw more balls than strikes for most of the game. It was just a strange game. Anyway, right now you just want to get the win and you want to get healthy. Here's the bad news for me. Tonight starts West Coast baseball. Oh, I'm pretty tired after a weekend of doing some traveling. And after, you know, traveling to New Orleans in the week before that, and so the end of last week for Sunbelt Conference Media Days, and now they want to say, well, the game's going to start at 9:10. Not be in the sixth inning at 9:10. The game's going to start at 9:10. Oh, I don't know if I'm going to make it tonight, so we'll see. They better pitch well. The other thing that made it a glorious weekend is I told y'all, I've been telling y'all about the Seattle Mariners. That's our next Astro weekend getaway. The Seattle Mariners just beat the A's 3 out of 4, including the last three. The Seattle Mariners. Seattle Mariners are two games up on the Yankees. who I'll get to in a little bit. And, you know, they're not that far behind second place in the A's anymore. They're a game and a half out of second place in the American League West. I wouldn't sleep on the Mariners. Now, the Astros have owned the Mariners for a very long time. And those kind of things tend to end eventually. They've been owning them for about a decade. And I don't know that it's going to – I mean, I hope it continues through this year. But, no, that is – those are not going to be fun games tonight. One thing that's going to happen, and I would assume he's going to be in the starting lineup, Alex Bregman's about to start a rehab assignment. Alex Bregman hasn't been a great player in a long, long time. It's time. It's time, Alex. Time to be a great player again. Now, hopefully his mediocre days are over. They've been lasting for about a year and a half now. It's time for him to step it up. Hopefully he will do that after this rehab assignment. But in the meantime, Elidmas Diaz, who's theoretically his backup, has been out for 2 months or something. And he's supposed to be back tonight. So I don't know this because I haven't seen his starting lineup, but I'm thinking Diaz is going to be starting at third tonight. That's going to be good to see. But thankfully, guys like Toro and Robo Garcia, they had their moments. Robo on Friday night had 3 hits. Toro on yesterday hit a crucial 2-run homer to give the Astros a lead, and they ended up winning the game 3-1. So, those guys were not as bad as they have been at times, or Toro was terrible last year. Of course, a lot of people were terrible last year. All over the league. But no, it was good to see that they contributed while those guys were out, and hopefully they'll be back soon and we can see what happens. I said I would get to the Yankees. Obviously, there's a lot of Yankee belly aching all over the country. A lot of people love the Yankees. A lot of people hate the Yankees. The bottom line is it's July and the Yankees are 3.5 out. Now, I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs because they have a lot of issues. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying there aren't real issues on the Yankees team. But all this, I mean, they're 3.5 out of the playoffs in July. Just say that again. They're 3.5 games out of the playoffs, and it's July. Not August yet. Long way to go. A lot can happen. And 3.5 games is nothing. I mean, it's nothing. Ask the A's how quickly you can overcome 3 games. Astros picked up 3 games on the A's since we last spoke Friday. I mean, it's Monday. Since we last spoke on Friday, the Astros have picked up 3 games on the A's. They went from 2.5 up to 5.5 up in 3 days. In 3 days. The Yankees are 3.5 out, and it's July. Give me a break with all this belly aching. It's July. They're 3.5 out. That's nothing. Now, again, that doesn't mean you're going to win. You still got to win games. But the opportunities are just – they're still very, very plentiful. Very, very plentiful. I'm sure – the Yankee fans are out there tired of hearing Aaron Boone talk about how they're going to bounce back and all that. I get it. It's not fun to lose. Join the club. People lose. But, no, they're still 4 games over. They're 3.5 out of the playoffs, and it's July. So I would only take so much belly aching from your Yankee friends without constantly reminding them they're only 3.5 out. I mean, it's not the end of the world just yet. It's still July. Obviously, there's all kind of stuff that we talked about the opening of training camp with the Hall of Fame teams, the Steelers and the Cowboys, a little bit last week. Saints and all kind of other teams all over the NFL will be opening up training camp this week, and it is I don't even know what to think about the Saints. And we don't have time to get into it yet. I'm just teasing it. We'll start talking about it after the commercial break. But obviously still very glass half full. And yet there's some things that are confusing. There's some things that are frustrating. And there's some things that need to change. I mean, if this is going to go better than we think, or better than most people are saying, some things are going to have to change, and we'll start talking about it. But again, I mean, we started it on Friday. The theme of the next, what is today, July the 26th. So you got July to August, August to September. The theme of the next, 8 to 9 weeks is 3-3. Just get me to 3-3. Is that possible? I don't know. We'll see. Got to get me to 3-3. In recent years, it's been can't be 0-2, and I don't want to be 0-2 again. Same deal. The Saints are opening training camp, and I don't really know what they do in training camp because they're never ready to start the season. They're just never ready. I don't know. I wonder if the coaches ever sit down at the beginning of camp because, you know what, Kat? We are never ready to start the season. Maybe we ought to do something different. Like, what do we do that makes us never ready to start the season? This team, as it's currently constructed, has never been ready to start a season. I mean, it's like, it's time. It's time for somebody, like, maybe tell them, like, they've already played 2 preseason games. I mean, they've got to learn how to get ready to start the season. We can whine about preseason games all we want. It doesn't do any good if you're not ready to start when the season starts. So we'll see. Lots of confusing things, lots of things to get angry about, and lots of things to be very confused about with the Saints as they start training camp. We'll take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll kind of fill in the gaps of what all those are about. Some of it's spilt milk, but sometimes you still have to scream over spilt milk so you don't do it again. I had that discussion on a different context. Oh, I don't like history. Well, we are so stupid as human beings. We've been making the same mistakes for 7,000 years. And we just keep making them over and over and over again because we're all stupid. Because we don't learn from history. Take a break. We'll come back on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. Want to remind you, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position. Win a $50 gift card to Half Shell Oyster House. But like all our great giveaways, you can't win if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com. All right, NFL training camps open this week. People are going to be talking about the Saints and other NFL teams, trying to guess, trying to speculate. I can't even let's start with the anger and get that out of the way. And I understand it's screaming over spilt milk, but that's okay. We got, unless we hammer home some things, maybe we'll never learn. If you're a head football coach out there, or a football coach out there, and you're listening, don't make this mistake. 2 years ago, Saints are playing Jacksonville. They're basically running out the clock against one of the most inept offenses I've ever seen. The defense is totally dominating the game. And they're running out the clock with a Z28 instead of the bulldozer. That is stupid. Stupid. When you're in run out the clock mode, look, you cannot take all of your starters off of the field. I get that. But every team's got two or three or four stars. At the NFL level, the guys who, you know, take up such a high percentage of your salary cap, they're the guys, your quote-unquote core superstars. The core structure of your team. Those guys need to be watching mop-up time just like fat guys like you and me. The fat guys like you and me need to be watching mop-up time just like the stars do. Now, Drew Brees is done now, but it always aggravated me that I'm in mop-up time, whether the Saints are down by 20 or up by 20, and most of the time in Drew Brees' era, they weren't down by 20 that many times. So most of the time, they were up, running out the clock, and I got Drew Brees taking hits out there. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So it never happened in the Drew Brees part of it where he got hurt in mop-up time, but I always feared it because it's stupid. Okay? So 2 years ago in Jacksonville, the Saints' offense was never the same because they're handing the ball off to number 41 in mop-up time. That's why you have backup blocking dummy running backs. Hand off to them in mop-up time. You don't hand off to 41 in mop-up time. Then last year, it's the season opener, you've got the win, you're just running out the clock. You're handing the ball off. What in the world is, at least they weren't handing it off to 41 at the time, but why in the world is 13 on the field? Ignorance, stupidity. Manage the game. So if you're a head football coach out there, when you're in mop-up time, take out your stars. Man, Sean Payton is so good at so many things, but he's so bullheaded on that junk or careless or whatever. I'm so sick of stars getting injured in mop-up time. That's stupid. And obviously I'm saying all of this because now we've got Plastic Man. I mean, you know, it depends. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, the most conservative and the most, you know, who knows? Nobody knows how long it's going to take him to come back after his surgery, you know, after the rehab. Nobody knows. But the bottom line is he's not going to be there in September, and he may not be there for October until maybe the end. So it's, you know, it's just, it's ridiculous. All because your whatever million-dollar wide receiver is standing out there watching from the field in mop-up time instead of watching from the bench where he should be in mop-up time. When all you're doing is running the clock, all you're doing is handing the ball off to your bulldozer and running out the clock. What does he need to be on the field for? It's so stupid. And look at this. All, you know, we're almost in August, starting camp, and we're still dealing with that ignorant decision to put that guy out there. I mean, I don't know how it works. All I know is if I'm a wide receiver coach, I'm saying, Coach, it's mop-up time. And my Cadillac is on the field right now in a demolition derby. I mean, that's basically what that is. You got this Cadillac receiver. You want to put him out there in a demolition derby when it doesn't even mean the game is over. You're running out the clock. What's he on the field for? Just stupid. So all this time later, now we're still dealing with this junk. And who knows how long he's going to be out. Now, obviously, they've got a lot of, you know, Peyton's got certain things that he's great at. And then there's certain things he's terrible at. He's terrible at clock. I mean, at when to review and when not to review. And he's terrible at taking players out. It's ridiculous. Now, what he's good at is trying to figure how to, you know, he's good at having a chip on his shoulder, for one. So while a lot of the negativity that we're going to hear about the Saints over the next month, 6 weeks or so, they're going to relish it. They're going to love that. Okay, they're going to love that because they love having chips on their shoulders. He's as petty as they come. They're going to love that. So that's the anger part, the stupidity of keeping your star players on the field in mop-up time. That's the anger. Now, the confusion part is, why in the world did he wait so long? I don't know that we're ever going to get a straight answer on that. I have no idea. I'm too glass half full to really believe that it's some, you know, he's pulling some Scottie Pippen because he wants to try to hurt the franchise. I don't really believe that. I've heard that theory. I don't really believe it. Still doesn't make any sense to me. The other thing is, since we last spoke, the Saints signed a veteran cornerback, and once again, I know he's coming from the Jets, but he played for the Falcons before that. It's amazing how often teams sign opponents from their own division. But anyway, the theory is that they do that because they play against them, so they know them. I don't really know what to think. The problem is he's not technically a suitable replacement for Jenkins because his history is as a slot cornerback. Not saying you don't need one of those, but that's not really what the Saints needed. Now, with that said, so much of what the Saints do is hybrid, but it's easy to hybrid everything in the middle. It's harder to hybrid an outside cornerback. And I'm just wondering if they don't pick up anyone else, which some, you know, people are expecting them to do, does that mean that they're actually going to consider playing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson as an outside cornerback? I just can't believe that. It takes away so much of what he does well. So, I'm still very confused about what's going on. You know, are they just throwing numbers at a dartboard? Who knows? I'm a little confused by some of that. And so we'll see how that plays out. And as far as who they're going to get, I was kind of eyeing DeeDee Westbrook, but again, I had no idea. I don't even know what they thought. The Vikings signed him over the weekend, so there's still other potential options out there. So we'll just wait and see on that. But I do think it's important. I think it's even more important than the cornerback to get. If you're going to bring a wide receiver in, to bring him in now. Because they got to get used to the offense and get some sort of relationship with whoever's going to be the quarterback, which is a whole different subject. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Fritz.
Good morning.
Are you all right, Kevin? You okay?
Oh, no. That's kind of stuff makes me angry. See, to me, that's the 2 + 2 = you and I have been talking on the airs for years. To me, that's the 2 + 2 = 4 thing that idiots like me aren't. Who don't know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff about football can figure out, then you got these rocket scientists that can't walk across the street on some issues. Like, when you're in mop-up time, take your stars out. That seems pretty easy to me.
Yeah, but, Kevin, this is the one equation that you not take it into account, okay? You know for yourself, the NFL is incentive-laden, right?
Well, that's true.
Okay, it's incentive-laden. So, for you to say, take him off the field. Now, if this guy needs one more catch to get $100,000, you see what I'm saying, Kevin? So you got to remember, it's a catch-22 is what you're saying, because it's easy to say take him off the field, but in the NFL, it's not like the NBA. This is all incentive-laden. So a lot of times these guys are on the field not because of choice, it's because of the money situation. So you have to weigh the pros and cons from both sides, Kevin. Have a good day and be safe and relax a little bit, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, sir. It's a good point, depending on the situation. No, it's a good point to take into account, no question. But again, when I'm talking about in this particular case, because he's right, and I'm not, you know, they did that with Emmanuel Sanders where they made the big deal about him catching a pass last year, and everybody was all excited. And I do see the positives of Sean Payton being a quote-unquote player guy where he will do that to help a player, even though theoretically it helps the player and not the team, and theoretically the head coach is part of the team as opposed to player. So I get that. But in this particular case, he's not catching a pass because they're just running the ball. I mean, you don't need an elite wide receiver on the field when you're just running out the clock. You're not going to throw it. You're just going to be running it. So, again, I understand the gentleman's point, and it was a good one, but in certain cases, you're just running the ball. He's not going to catch another pass. And I just think you got to be smart. But I understand that there are some situations where you know, incentives. All right, can we get one more call in before the break? No, we can't get a call in. We'll take a commercial break. Please hold on, callers. I know there's some on the line, and we'll take a commercial break, and we'll get you on if you hang on the other side of 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you about our Tiger Road Trip giveaway. If you would like to make that great trip out west in early September, well, September the 4th, you need to go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to maybe win the great Tiger Road Trip getaway, where you can get 3 nights hotel accommodation, round trip, airfare, game tickets, as well as an invitation to the pregame party next to the stadium. All of this brought to you by Sterling Automotive Group, Total Travel Sports, and 1037thegame.com. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello. That one didn't wait. Let's try one more.
Get away.
Hello.
Hey, Kev, good morning.
Howdy.
Look, you got every reason to be angry at this situation this morning, and no offense to the last caller, but that was nowhere even close to the situation when he got his ankle rolled up on. And
it's
we
just
could
stupid.
Fault him for kind of playing at half speed, which is normally when people get hurt in the NFL, is when they're taking plays off. But there was no need for him to be on the field.
It's just
put
stupid.
A tight end right there.
Yes.
It was, and look at the long-term ramifications. We have got players that this is a year where we can't afford a mass unit. We're already shorthanded due to free agency losses and retirements, and people we were really counting on are not playing now for half a season.
This is the easy stuff. Again, I've never been a coach. I don't know how it works, but there's got to be some sort of system to where you have coaches who are communicating and saying, okay, it's the end of the game. All we're doing is run out the clock. Let's get this guy off the field and that guy off the field and this guy off the field. It cannot be that difficult.
No, and we've said it on more than one occasion regarding Drew Brees being in a game.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's, again, other than offensive linemen who you pretty much have to have in, you got substitutes. And it's also getting substitutes reps, which is good for the team in the long haul. So, look, I'm in 100% agreement with you on this one. And I'm looking at the long-term ramifications. This is, to me, a minimum 2-loss impact, if not more. And, honestly, I think this completely changes the quarterback competition now. I can see them leaning more toward Taysom Hill and his abilities now than Winston with his, because of the loss of this one player. Now, I may be wrong on that, but it just seems like Hill, with his ability to run, I mean, I could see us in a wishbone at this point. We don't have any receivers. None.
Folks, none. That does not work. We need to get that out of our minds. You cannot line up in the NFL and run the football. You cannot do it.
I know, but it cannot work.
We need to get that out of our minds.
You got to have people to throw to. You know, Alvin Kamara probably becomes our best receiver. Look, now they could legitimately line Taysom Hill up at receiver, and we couldn't argue with it. That's how thin we are at that position. I mean, this is a huge impact. And look, they're saying out till the bye, which is week six, so he comes back week seven. There's no saying he's going to be fully healthy and ready to play after week seven. It's an ankle. The first time you cut on this thing, he could end up messing it up again.
Absolutely.
This is a huge blow. And on top of that, he's, what, 10, 12% of our cap?
Because they don't know how to manage personnel in mop-up time.
Yeah, that's the easy part.
A moron like me can figure that out. I'm screaming at it every time it happens. Get that guy off the field. You got all these coaches, and then you got all these quality control coaches. What do these people do during games?
Kevin, I can think of a dozen shows that you've had over the last 10 years where we've spoken, why was this guy on the field at this time?
It's unbelievable.
At least, if not 20. And this time it came back, and it's really biting them hard in the butt. I'm mad at Onyemata because his was a personal decision, and I just don't understand why players don't run anything they put. It's sad you got to do it, but anytime you're going to put a new supplement in your body, you need to run it by the league and say, is this okay? And he didn't. So that one, but this injury thing is, again, you're right. This one's on the coaching staff, and it's I don't think of a more – the only more devastating blow we could get is if Lattimore got hurt. And he might be suspended.
And what's taking so long with that?
This is to me a minimum two loss injury, if not more. I just really think it impacts our offense greatly. And maybe Sean Payton's going to prove how great a coach he is with a bunch of backups. I just don't think we arguably now have the weakest wide receiver core in the league.
Again, none of that stuff matters. And people keep saying that, but it does not matter.
It does. Just said it's a passing league, Kevin.
Well, yeah.
You can't line up and run the football. We arguably now have the worst. We've got a tight end we're expecting to break out, which I think he will. I think he's going to be a great player, but that's expectation. You've got one receiver who's probably a legitimate number three, who we're asking to be a number one now, and Tre'Quan Smith. Callaway may be able to play, and he showed promise. Harris showed promise. None of those guys are legit one or two receivers. They're all number three
Harris,
guys.
If he's healthy, is a big play receiver. But he's got to play. I mean, again, it's all about if Harris is on the field, he will make big plays. I don't doubt that, but he's got to play. He's got to play.
Well, this is really depressing, and I understand your ire and your concern, and it concerned me. And I thought we were probably a 10-win team, and now I'm saying we're probably an eight-win team.
Let's not get crazy.
I think the loss of Thomas is a legitimate two-loss injury, Kevin. I mean, he's going to miss half the season, and when he comes back.
I get the concern. Well, a long way to go. Unfortunately, you know, we won't get this answer for a long time. We're going to be talking about this over and over and over again for the next 2 to 3 months. But it is what it is. Thanks for the call.
God bless, bro.
706-0111, 706-0111. If you would like to get in, if you have any thoughts on all that, I things go through my mind, like when I try to figure all this out. I mentioned it on Friday. It made zero sense to me, or it didn't make sense to me, why the Saints supposedly, if you believe the reports, were going to pick a wide receiver in the second round. And then when you hear this news, it's like, oh, okay, now I see why they were picking a wide receiver in the second round. And again, I'm speculating here. I don't know any of this, but it at least that part made sense. I wonder how long they've known about the Onyemata stuff, the Gus stuff. because I think something that a lot of us forgot about or didn't or have not addressed is the first-round pick Peyton Turner played a lot of inside. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be the answer. I'm not saying he's going to play the majority of his downs inside, but maybe for a while he will. Remember, when I first, the day after the draft, I was like, this cat is Wayne Martin. Wayne Martin played inside and outside for the Saints in his career. And maybe because of losing, you know, trading Malcolm Brown in the offseason for salary cap reasons and Gus being suspended for the – maybe the majority of his early part will be inside, which I think is not good because that it's more you know, he better be ready physically because that's obviously where all the real physical part of it is on the inside. So I guess we're going to find out pretty early if indeed that's the case at all, you know, where he is physically in the NFL. And it, you know, that could be a problem. But he could also use his quickness there as well. So I wonder if Turner's going to be a little bit more of an option for all the, you know, the potential holes that you're going to have in the interior of the defensive line, then maybe some of us are thinking, and where they can juggle him and he can be inside and outside. And obviously, Cam Jordan could do some of that on occasion. There's just going to be a lot of mixing around. And truthfully, on the defensive line, there's always a lot of mixing around anyway. I do think that, look, is this passing game going to be like one of the best in the league? No, I don't expect that, but I don't think they need that. Even with Michael Thomas, I don't think they were going to have like this top five passing game like they've had at times in the Drew Brees era. I never had those expectations anyway. But the thing that I don't get, and look, Joey just said it, and almost every national show or segment that I've heard on the Saints since Friday, they're saying it too. And I'm not saying it doesn't make any sense, but I'm just not. This whole idea that if you don't have Plastic Man out there, that Taysom needs to be the quarterback, Batman needs to be the quarterback, I can't wrap my mind around that. To me, it's the other direction. I keep hearing all these people say, no Michael Thomas means that Taysom needs to be the quarterback. That doesn't make any sense to me. To me, no Michael Thomas means even it becomes even more important that you add more different elements to the offense to be harder to prepare for and to have more options as a play caller. To me, it means even more that Jameis needs to be the quarterback. I don't get it at all. I don't get the way people think. I mean, maybe there's something I'm not getting. And if you have an explanation, tell me. If you lose your theoretically your second best offensive weapon in your wide receiver that you're paying all this money to, why does it make sense to limit your offense even more by taking away another weapon and putting them at quarterback? And the other thing about the whole Batman at quarterback thing is he doesn't run when he plays quarterback. Doesn't run that much. They try to do the whole Aaron Brooks thing from 20 years ago where, oh, we're trying to make him a pocket passer so he don't run. Well, no, that's just stupid. I don't understand that at all. What sense is – okay, so we have, I don't know, three or four big weapons, and so we're going to – if you lose one of the weapons, then our first reaction is we want to take away another one of the weapons to further limit the offense. What am I missing here? I've been hearing this since Friday. I don't get it. You lose one weapon, you need to make those other weapons you have even become even more precious. You don't want to eliminate them too. I don't understand what people do. None of this makes any sense to me. Nothing. None of it. Except for the stupidity of not knowing when to take players out. That's pretty black and white. That's 2 + 2 = 4. And this fat guy can do that. Take a commercial break. We'll finish out the first hour next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Friday was so bad I wasn't even able to enjoy that great song, but at least today is not quite as bad as Friday, so I can enjoy it a little bit. Want to remind you, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to maybe win Astro Weekend Getaway 4. I mentioned it in the first segment. Not the White Sox, not the Yankees, not the Padres, but this Seattle Mariner team just won 3 out of 4 against the Oakland A's. Who knows? By the weekend of August the 19th, they might be in second place. Very possible. They're only a game and a half behind Oakland as we speak. They just beat Oakland 3 straight games. So this could be a battle of first or second place. Either way, it's going to be, you know, that's a little, almost, that's about 3 weeks from now. Going to be a crucial series for the Astros. Hopefully they've can build an even bigger lead by then. We will see. And they will be battling the Red Sox and the White Sox, who they both beat won five out of seven games against this year. They'll be battling those for the best record and the number one overall seed in the American League. So we'll see how all that plays out. But again, if you want to win 4 tickets for a game on that weekend and $200 Visa gift card, you need to go to 1037thegame.com. and take care of that today. All right, I'm not going to talk a lot about this, but when I'm right, I tend to crow like a lot of us do, and so when I'm wrong, I said there was nothing to be concerned about with the men's Olympic basketball team. Apparently, there's a little bit to be concerned about. I'm not, you know, a totally jump off the cliff person, and again, it's hard for me to get all wrapped up in something I never talk about but once every maybe 4 years. So I don't know why everybody makes a big deal about this Olympic stuff. But maybe there's a little bit more concern than I thought there should be. So it's very possible I'm wrong on that. We will see. All right. Commercial break. That's it for the first hour. Another hour to follow. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. We're broadcasting from the First South Farm Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3, 133 on LUS. And football season is here. We obviously have been talking football. I was going to talk more Sun Belt football on Friday, then Nick kept giving us bad news after bad news after bad news, so we were kind of deflecting. I felt like a boxer just taking haymakers one after the other on Friday. And obviously a lot of national news going on with this Texas-Oklahoma coming to the SEC thing. And we're going to be talking about that, you know, for a while now. And for years, really, like, where is all that going to end? We did a lot of down-the-road speculating on that on Friday. And again, if you have any more thoughts about that, certainly feel free to give us a call. I encourage you. I need all the – again, I'm a person that likes things being done decently in an order, and there's not a whole lot decently in order, at least from this side of the fence. Now, look, it's possible – I'm not saying Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis and everyone else who's making decisions with behind the scenes in the Saints organization is happy about losing their best wide receiver. There's no way they're happy about that. That's impossible. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they have probably a little more clarity to what's about to happen than we do. So maybe they're not panicking as much as some of us are behind the scenes, and I get that, but they are, man, there's just so many things to try to figure out. What are they going to do at cornerback? What are they going to do at wide receiver? you know, the thing that I don't know any more than Sean Payton or Mickey Loomis knows is if you tell me right now Deonte Harris is going to play 16 games and be healthy, I'm still not happy because I still think you got to do things the right way. You got to consistently make good decisions and not make irresponsible decisions like they did by having 13 on the field in mop-up time, because that there's going to be – yeah, you're going to get away with it, but this time they didn't get away with it, and it's a two-year mistake. A two-year mistake, a two-year 2 + 2 = 4, as basic as it gets. As basic as it gets. A moron like me can figure out that your best player should not be on the field in mop-up time. Unless your best player is like an offensive tackle, like Joey was saying. I mean, it's just stupid. For two seasons, and maybe even more, we're going to be paying for that one stupid decision. But certainly if you have any comments on any of that, you can try to figure out the wide receiver situation. We'll be talking some about that. This whole quarterback mentality things that people have. Again, I disagree with most of you last season, and now I'm hearing the same. To me, that's totally off-the-wall quarterback thinking in terms of the Saints, and we'll have to continue. And we'll be talking about that for the next 6 weeks because none of it makes any sense to me, and I'll fill in more details on that. But first, let's go take a phone call. Hello.
The USA basketball team, I would love to see the roster. What you think about this? Consist of players 24 or 25 and under. Matter of fact, all Olympic athletes.
In other words, anyone 25 or older compete.
No.
I mean, that's kind of the way it used to be, except for some of the Eastern European stuff years ago. So I wouldn't be categorically against that. No, I'd have no issue with that.
Also, I'm like you. Who cares, man? I know, I expect them to win the goal. Yeah, they lost. Just one game. But my thing is, I know I'm not watching, to be honest with you. I know that's not the best representing the country. You know what I'm saying? I know that's not the best players representing the United States. We know there's players from this country who already played in two or three Olympics. So, they're looking at it like, I'm done with it. You know? So, also, man, I just think with the whole bubble mentality of last year, man, some cats just not. They just don't want to go through that.
I just don't understand why someone.
Like, and I look, said, they lost. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't seen a clip. I don't know.
They were leading the whole game, and they got outscored like 16-2 in the last couple minutes, and they lost. I don't.
Hey, like I said, man, let's make it interesting. See, I'm like you. You know, I don't care because if they're blowing out teams, oh, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to do that. So it's like no one would care if they were winning. So you see what I'm saying? Like,
no, I definitely hear you. Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's no big deal. Think about it. I'm sure fans would love to see someone like Zion, Ja Morant. But that Draymond Green, he shouldn't be playing on two Olympics. He already played on one, right? He played on 2016.
Yeah.
No, I know he has a defensive presence. I understand he's more of a vocal leader in a sense. But come on, man. Let's get someone out. I don't like old Duke Bam. I just don't like the roster maker. I know some people are attacking the cat from San Antonio, and
I don't know if someone more old school teamwork guy is the guy you want in the Olympics again. But I don't watch enough.
Also, another thing too, man. We're making the games on Peacock. Well, that should be on Peacock, right? Like if we're going, I said this earlier on another station. If we're going to talk about the Olympics, why not show athletes who don't really get that due every 4 years? An athlete who's, they're not getting paid the big bucks. you know, they might, hopefully they win a goal, get a couple of endorsement money, whatever, you know, and live off of that. Remember, I know that there's a Geico commercial with a chick who, at gymnastics, you know, always making the faces.
Right.
So she was able to live off of that moment, you know. Excuse me, young woman.
I got you.
That's all I have to add, man. And like I said, man, if they win the goal, yeah. If they win. If they don't, yeah. You know.
I'm with you.
Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Jay. No, again, it's look, there are people who love the Olympics, and it's fine. I just have trouble. I just don't think, in my opinion, it's this big authentic thing. Like, if we're going to talk about this for off and on for 4 years, then let's get into it. But if we're not going to talk about it at all for 4 years, and all of a sudden it's this major thing that we got to get all upset about, I just think that's – I just can't – my mind doesn't think that way. Like, if it's that important, then why haven't we been talking about this for 4 years? Who should the Olympic coach be? What should the makeup of the team be? Why are we doing it this way? Why are we doing it that way? I haven't heard anybody talk about that for 4 years. So why are we worried about it now? I just can't think that way. Anyway, 706-0111, 706-0111. If you would like to get in. But I want to get back to this quarterback thing that, again, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's something right in front of me that I'm just not getting. But when you talk about Jameis or Batman for the quarterback, your offensive scheme has to be very, very different to make one successful than the other. So I keep hearing people nationally saying, all right, they're gonna go with Batman as the starter, and if it doesn't work, they're gonna shift to Jameis. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what am I missing? You have to have set up your offense a certain way to make Batman as the starting quarterback work. Jameis can't make that offense work. He's not set up for that, and you wouldn't want him to anyway. So what sense does it make to think that? Like, if you're going to make Batman your quarterback, you better decide that real quick, because you got to adjust everything in your offense to try to make that work. I don't even know if it would work. To me, all you're doing is limiting the effectiveness in the weapons in your offense, which is already more limited now because there's no plastic man for the next couple months, 2 or 3 months. So how in the world can that help your offense when you continue to limit your weapons? I mean, this seems so basic to me, and yet all these other people you hear, nationally and locally, they're saying something completely different, as if it's like I'm supposed to believe it. No, doesn't make any sense. It's like last year. All these people were just drilling Batman because he didn't do this well and he didn't do this well. Well, you know how long it's been since he's consistently practice as a starting quarterback? You know how long it's been? Like, he's been practicing as Batman for a long time now. But suddenly, Drew Brees gets hurt, and all of a sudden, he's supposed to be this polished quarterback. It befuddles me. The way people think, I just don't get it. So to me, the whole going from one quarterback to the other, well, if it doesn't work, you just go to that. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't think it's that easy. I don't think that transition is that easy. And I also don't think you can have two very, very, very different skill sets at quarterback and then go through camp and decide after your third preseason game who your quarterback's going to be. And you might have to run a not totally, but a very different offense depending on which one you choose. That makes no sense to me either. That doesn't make any sense to me. I am not getting this whole quarterback situation, and I don't get what anybody says about it. And again, it confuses me and confounds me even more when the quarterback, whoever's going to be, loses his biggest weapon, and the solution, what everybody's telling me is, that means you're going to limit your offense more by taking Batman out of the offense and making him a quarterback. I mean, I don't know. It's almost like we're talking about, like, speaking in Swahili or something here. And nothing that I'm hearing makes any sense to me. And Raymond wonders why I'm so confounded this morning. Unbelievable. Take a commercial break. We'll come back with more on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. I want to remind you to go to 103.7thegame.com. Put yourself in position to win a $100 Google Play card, which can be used to purchase apps or games or music or movies, books, whatever you'd like. But you can't win if you don't join. So go to 103.7 The Game. Join the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win a $100 Google Play gift card. All right. Phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. One of the recent reports is that the Saints are trying out Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan is kind of a possession receiver. Well, he isn't kind of. He is a possession receiver. You know, again, could it work? I mean, who knows? But he's not, you know, going to make this huge impact. Not saying he can't make any impact if they would sign him and he would make the team, but he's not the solution. You know, on Friday we talked about guys like Larry Fitzgerald, Dez Bryant. I mean, those are the, you know, Golden Tate. Golden Tate just fits into that category of I've talked about it quite a few times over the years, where you have a player that was kind of your nemesis, and then whenever you pick him up towards the end of their career, it never seems to work out, at least for the teams that I like. I remember for years the Astros could never get Orlando Merced out, could never get that guy out in a big situation, or so it seemed. And finally they got him, and then he was terrible. You know, Woody Williams, when he was pitching for the Padres, just owned the Astros, frustration after, and then they picked up Woody Williams, he was terrible. I mean, it just never seems to work out when you pick up this guy. Like, you remember Michael Haynes, for longtime Saints fan. He was from New Orleans, and the whole story was in the band, and he became a football player. And then he'd catch big play after big play after big play against the Saints, and then the Saints acquired him. And it's not that he didn't do anything. He wasn't terrible, but it just didn't work out like you thought it was going to work out. So Golden Tate kind of falls into that category for me. I'm not saying he's terrible, because he's not terrible. But I don't know that he fits into what the Saints are doing, and he certainly doesn't fit into the kind of player that it seems like, in my perception, normally works out for the teams I root for. You know, there are things happening. You know, the Vikings that we talked about picked up Dede Westbrook. The Texans over the weekend traded for Chicago Bears wide receiver Anthony Miller. Not saying Anthony Miller's just a great guy, but there are potential. You're not going to be able to pick up someone to fill the shoes of Plastic Man, who, whether you have him ranked third or fifth or sixth or tenth, he's one of the better receivers in football. Okay? And so you can't just replace that guy on one. You just have to pick up someone who can give you a little bit more of an option, just to make the offense a little bit more, you know, just to give the quarterback and the head and the play caller a little more options. So, you know, Chris Hogan would not wow me, of course. I actually was discussing Dede Westbrook over the weekend as a potential option, with Saints fan friends of mine, and then you know we get word that the Vikings picked him up. So I don't have like one guy that I'm just clamoring, man. I hope they get this guy. But they got to get somebody, and I think again that it's more important to get him in soon so they can get some sort of relationship with whoever the quarterback's going to be, or at least in the offense. Like, because again, they can't afford to pick up someone who's going to take the first two or three or four games to get acquainted, because they need him to be able to make some, even if it's just 40% of the impact or 30% of the impact that a Michael Thomas plastic man would make. They need him to make whatever that impact's going to be right away. It can't be, well, they're just sleepwalking for the first three games like the whole team seems to do every year. I mean, they can't afford that. Whoever it is probably needs to be a veteran so they can make that adjustment quick. And whoever it is needs to be somebody who can, whatever he's going to do what he's going to do in week four and week one. And that's a lot to ask. You know, again, what I don't want is to pick up some guy like, say, it's Chris Hogan whoever, and then he comes here and he's basically Austin Carr. This guy's been on the team for a couple of years now and he never does anything. I mean, like, we already got Austin Carr. Don't need another Austin Carr. We've already seen that. So, I don't know. I think getting whoever they're going to get, they need to get him, have that person get in here, and whatever impact they're going to be able to make, be ready to make it in the open. I don't know. I know Sean Payton's a big motivation guy, but I would, boy, I sure hope that they get the message across that the season starts the second Sunday in September. It doesn't start in October. Like, for whatever reason, the Saints think the season starts in October. The season starts the second Sunday in September. That's when it starts. The other thing that national people keep saying, and some local people too, that it sounds good. Sounds good. Sounds great, actually. I love it. But it's not. There's no empirical proof that this outfit can do it. And that is, well, the defense is going to carry them early. I keep hearing that. The defense is going to carry him early. I would like somebody who says that or even thinks that to point out to me when was the last time the Saints played defense in September. Please explain that to me. When did that happen? Did I miss it? I haven't missed that many Saints fans in the last 40 years. Been a long time since the Saints played defense in September. A long time. So... no, I would like to believe that, and I hope it happens. But the solution can't be, well, the defense is just going to carry them through the first three or four or five games, because that never happens in this regime. This team always waits till October to play defense. I don't know why. I can't explain it. I can't even begin to explain it. I'm just telling you the way it's been for a long time now. And it was that way again last year. There were some people said, I remember after the first game, we're like, oh, the defense looked better. No, the Buccaneers were just terrible on offense. The Buccaneers were terrible on offense till the second half of the season, because it took that long for Brady and whoever else to convince their head coach that we got to stop acting like morons and run the football. Which is why I don't buy most of the criticism of Jameis, because Jameis didn't have what it took to tell this guy, Bruce Arians, Cat, this ain't arena football. We got to run it some. I mean, all he did was throw the ball down the field. When Jameis was there, they never ran the ball ever. I remember there was one game they ran like three times the whole game. Four times. Like, what are they doing? And so, no, that can't be. That can't happen. So I don't know what's about to happen. I just know that everything I'm hearing makes zero sense. I'm hearing the defense. I'm hearing Jameis. Batman's going to be the quarterback now because there's no Michael Thomas / plastic man. makes no sense. The defense is going to carry the team early. Well, the defense never plays well until October. This is all not adding up to me. Now, could it be possible? Theoretically, it's possible that the defense will actually play a good game in September. But last year, again, the first game, theoretically, they made some plays on defense. But really, it was just the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers were terrible at the beginning of the year offensively. And then, you know, the Oakland game was miserable. They were just miserable on defense. The Packer game, they were miserable on defense. The Charger game, they were miserable on defense. Again, just like it seems to be every year, they don't start playing defense till October. And now they're going to try to shift that with a secondary that still doesn't have a second outside cornerback, even though over the weekend they did sign a cornerback in Brian Poole. And again, it's not that I hate Brian Poole. It's not that I don't want Poole on the team. I'm just not convinced yet that the addition of him can help solve the outside cornerback position. I just need for something to make sense quickly having to do with the Saints. That's what I need. I need something to happen real quickly that makes some sense, because all the analysis I'm hearing makes zero sense to me. The moves that are being made, they're not necessarily bad, but they still don't really seem to make sense to me. So, and again, you're talking about a guy totally glass half full. I'm not buying all. Joey talked about 8 or 9 wins. I ain't buying that at all. I'm not buying it. I'm way too glass half full for that. But I'm just saying, still, what I'm hearing makes zero sense. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Kevin, that's why you don't read or listen to the national media, man. Politics, sports, anything. Kevin, that's why it makes more sense for Jameis Winston, even before this Michael Thomas thing, he was going to be the starting quarterback. But you get your boy more involved in the also, what you call him?
Batman.
Batman. You get Batman more involved in the offense. You flex him out of the receiver. You do some crazy gimmick college stuff with him. But, yeah, man, he just becomes more involved in the offense, man.
I agree. See, that makes sense. What I'm hearing makes no sense.
No, absolutely. That's what's going to happen. That's why I just don't pay attention to the national media, man. Have a good one.
Thanks. Let's get one more call before the next break. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Pitt. How you doing today?
Good, sir. How are you? Please help me.
Man, I'm hotter than the Astros right now. It's warm outside. Look, I can't help you because I agree completely with you. It doesn't make any sense to me for anybody to say, oh, it needs to be Taysom Hill as quarterback with Michael Thomas out. Don't you think you would want a guy who has a better proven passing record? I mean, I know Jameis threw 30 and 30. But people want to harp on those interceptions. The dude had no time to make decisions. The offensive line for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was terrible.
And they had no running game. And they didn't even try to run the football.
No, he was their running game.
Yes.
Because he was trying to run for his life.
Yes.
So it doesn't make any sense to me why anybody would want Taysom Hill over Jameis Winston right now, especially with Michael Thomas being out. And as far as the defense carrying, again, I'm with you. It's when? When have they ever done that? I mean, I would love to say, oh, they had a staunch action against my Buccaneers at the beginning of last season, but like you said, the Buccaneers' offense was just garbage. And that was because Brady hadn't established himself and to the whole role of, okay, this is what we're going to do. And Coach Arians didn't, you know, kind of go, okay, this is what we're going to do. So the Saints, I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see, but all these national guys who don't follow the Saints and who don't follow anything going on beyond the stats, they're idiots. They don't know what's going on because they don't have a finger on the pulse.
Well, I agree with you there. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you very much. Now, again, if you get me to 3-3, normally by game 5, 6, 7, the defense does decide, you know what, I think the season has started. I think we're going to start playing some good football. Could the defense carry him the second half? Absolutely. That I believe. We've seen that happen a lot over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years. That I believe. But the whole concept and the commentary that the defense is going to carry him early, I haven't seen that in a long time. That I don't believe at all. And I'm hoping I'm wrong. Look, I would love to be wrong. I would love the defense would come out and just play lights out from day one. That would be tremendous. I'd be the happiest guy around. But to expect that to happen after what we've seen the last 5, 6, 7 years, no. I don't believe that is going to happen. Take a commercial break. We'll be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Oh, man, I need the Astros to win tonight. The game starts at 9:10. By the way, you can hear that game right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Astros at Mariners. Now, normally, the Astros over the years have had an incredible amount of success against the Mariners, and especially in Seattle. For whatever reason, they play very well in Seattle over the years. Now, I'm not saying they've never lost. I'm just saying most of the time they win there. And even when they were really bad before this, you know, even back in whenever that was, 11, 12, 13, they always seem to play better than they are in Seattle. I like the fact that Seattle's been playing well and helping the Astros out by beating the A's, but in that process, they're obviously building a lot of momentum and confidence, and we'll see how that works out. But I'm going to be, if I end up, I don't know if I'm going to make it tonight. Of course, I've said that before, and then my adrenaline, somebody hits a big double or hits a home run and gets me all fired up, and then I make it till midnight or 12:30 or whenever the game's going to end. But, man, if I stay up till midnight or 12:30, please, please win the game. If they win the game, I'm tired, but I'm tired with a smile on my face. If they lose the game with everything going on with the Saints, oh, man, it's going to be a rough Tuesday morning on Footnotes tomorrow. So, but, again, you can hear that game right here. Astros, Mariners in Seattle, first pitch 9:10. Right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
All right. Do you think by the time Michael Thomas' contract is up, do you think the money that you gave him last year will be justified?
Well, justified, I guess, is a loaded word. Will it work out? Very possibly it will not work out. He hung up. You know, very possible it won't work out. Does that mean that he wasn't worth the money in terms of market value at the time? I would still say he'd be worth the money in terms of what he was, what he accomplished. But again, it's also why I don't – look, I love that he caught 150 balls and that most of them helped the Saints win games. But I don't ever want my players to do all these historical things. Because with kind of along the lines of what this last caller is kind of insinuating, I think, is it leads to things that aren't good for your team, you know. But in terms of the market value, I can't argue that he was worth it based on who he was and what he did and what other guys are making. So that haven't done even what he did that year. And again, if they just put him on the bench at the end of – now, could he have gotten hurt in game two? Yeah, you can get hurt in practice, okay? I get that. But, chances are, if they would have just put him on the bench, none of this would have happened. Think about how much – last year was such a struggle offensively for so much of the year and into the playoffs because – you know, Drew had everything that happened to him, and then Michael Thomas wasn't there, and it was just constant struggle. Everybody was always hurt, it seemed like, on offense. And they didn't have, like, the Saints have had many seasons where they've had more injuries. It's just the injuries that they had last year. It wasn't like their number of injuries was all that extravagant. It's just that the injuries that they had were just so to such critical players, and it just it made the offense. I mean, it's possible that Deontay Harris is so small that he's never going to be able to stay healthy. But I'm just hoping against hope. And look, I'm a guy that likes what I call blockout receivers. I like guys like Michael Thomas who can be physical, go up and get the football. But I can see, obviously, you don't have to look very far. Look at what Tyreek Hill has done for the Chiefs offense. And look, I'm not even remotely comparing the Saints offense to the Chiefs offense. I'm just saying I've never been a what I call midget a fan of midget receivers. But you know, again, you have to just not be paying attention to see that Harris has made a lot of big plays. Go back and look at the first quarter of the playoff game against the Bucs before he got hurt. The Bucs defense, which is great, they had no answer for him. Nor did their special teams. And then he gets hurt. And Batman, people forget, Batman was not playing in those games, those playoff games. He was out too. They just had so few options. Genius had so few options as a play caller, and that's why I just can't fathom volunteering for limiting the options this year. Well, so we'll see how that plays out. All right, the other big thing going on, obviously, in the world of sports, and I hope to try to figure it out, is everything going on in the world of college athletics with Texas and Oklahoma. The report is that they have officially told the Big 12 they're not going back. I think we all knew that. You know, we were reading things over the weekend like the Big 12 is going to try to talk them out of it. Like, once you get to this point, there is no talking someone out of it. Like, you don't allow something like that to be leaked out and to come out. And then, we're going to have meetings and the Big 12 officials are going to talk Texas and Oklahoma out of it. They're going to try to entice them to change their mind and come back. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So, the next, of course, there's many next questions, but one of them is when is this going to start? It seems like 2 years from now is the most realistic, but maybe they can speed it up. Maybe even next year it could start. I've said many times, I'm a terrible sports lawyer. I don't understand all that contract fine print stuff. So I have no idea what's really realistic. I mean, other people are guessing, but I'm really guessing on that. But it seems like if I had to guess, it seemed like 2023 would make the most sense, but we'll see. And again, the potential ramifications are, look, on Wednesday night, there was this little social gathering. We talked to, a lot of people, media members and SID kind of sports information people from other teams. And a lot of people's first reaction is it's not going to happen because Missouri doesn't want it, because Texas A&M doesn't want it, and who knows who else doesn't want it. The problem with that is when you are like, in my mind, I don't even consider Missouri and Texas A&M as part of the SEC. And just like I'm not going to consider Texas and Oklahoma part of the SEC. And so when you are one of these outsiders who are kind of coming in and reaping the benefits of being in the SEC without being what you'd call an old-school SEC member, I think you, like, if you're A&M, all these other people at Alabama and LSU and Mississippi, Florida and all these old school SEC teams, Tennessee even, they're going to look at this guy, Cat, we let you in our league and now you're going to backstab us by voting against what we want for the betterment of the league? So, yeah, Missouri and A&M don't want those schools in there. But, again, that's they're going to do what the other the people who are running the league are going to tell them to do. I mean, like, that's a petty little neighborhood argument that can't get in the way of what's going on, this steamroll towards domination and getting to where you have all these mega conferences. So I there's no doubt in my mind A&M's not happy about this, and I'm sure Missouri's not thrilled about it either. But, you know, when you're a relatively new member and you're just trying to feel your way into this mega conglomerate that is the SEC, that would not be a smart move to go against the people who are running the league. No, they're going to not like it, but they're going to grin and bear it because there's way too much benefit to being in the SEC. I mean, look at all the mega millions they got. Just SEC just handed to them because of the pandemic. I don't remember the figure. It was like $30 or $40 million, whatever it was. They just handed to all these schools. Most mid-majors' entire athletic budget kind of is that. I mean, and they just handed it to all their schools because they're the SEC. They can. And so, yeah, you don't, you know, it's going to happen is the point of all that. It's going to happen. And it's in it. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of Mr. Texas A&M, your little Southwest Conference. Put your little Southwest Conference hand up and vote for it just because we're telling you to. I mean, you know, alienating everyone in your conference is not what you want to do if you're Missouri or A&M, in my opinion. So I don't think that's going to be this big obstacle. It's going to happen. And now, what happens next? When does it start? I don't know. I mean, none of us really know, but it's going to be a lot of speculating. I mean, you're already seeing this mega, and we talked about this on Friday. We were throwing out ideas on Friday. You're going to have this mega conference, this mega conference, this mega conference, this mega conference, and these are the teams. You're already seeing people. Now, that doesn't mean all these things are going to be right, but it's going to be something like that. I'm pretty convinced of that. Fascinating. I mean, we're living in an era where major, major change is happening. But no, there is no, oh, we're going to talk you out of it and you're coming back to the Big 12. You want to talk about foolishness. That was foolish talk. Take a commercial break. Finish out today's show next, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. Footnotes, Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to perhaps win a $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink in Broussard. Again, you can't win if you don't join, so go to the website, 1037thegame.com. Join the Rewards Club. You might win a $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink in Broussard. All right. That was a cool, this date in history. Ron Guidry obviously had a great run with the Yankees, and I'm sure him and a lot of other Yankee fans around this area are a little perplexed about what's going on, but as I talked about in the first segment, it's still July, it's still very early. What is going on, though, in the middle of all this NFL training camp starting, in the middle of, you know, all of this, you know, groundbreaking, tectonic plate kind of college athletic stuff shifting, is this is the last week of July. And so we are rapidly approaching the trade deadline. And so exactly what big stars are going to be traded, we'll see. One of the reports, you know, there's still people linking Craig Kimbrell to the Astros. Earlier today, I was talking about my memory of players that I don't particularly like coming to my team. It normally does not work out. So I'll just throw that out there amidst all these Craig Kimbrell to the Astros. That cat better do good. You were talking about meltdown. If he comes to Houston and blows it, because I already don't like the guy. Now, if he's on my team, I'm going to pull for him because he's on my team. But I can't stand that guy. And so if he comes to the Astros, he better do good. Oh, my heart cannot take a player that I don't particularly like coming to my team and then blowing it from my team. That would be tough to That'd be real tough to swallow. But one of the names that's out there that if you're like the Braves or one of these teams, if this is true, I would say, wow, Jose Ramirez supposedly could be on the block and could be traded. Now, why the Indians would trade Jose Ramirez, I have no idea. But Jose Ramirez is one of those guys who for a week can carry a team. I've seen him do it. He's really good. He doesn't always hit for the highest batting average, but he can field, he can run, and he can hit for power. Wow. That would be a blockbuster trade if some team that's in contention can get Jose Ramirez. So keep your eye out for that. All right. That'll do it for today's show. Thank you for helping me to survive in the midst of this mountain of confusion. And hopefully the Astros can win and it'll help anyway. Have a nice day.